This podcast episode is presented by TÜV SÜD, your partner for hydrogen safety and efficiency. Over the past decades, we have supported a large number of successful hydrogen projects and have built up industry-leading expertise. Our ecosystem helps you master the complex challenges of the hydrogen market.
Back to the Hydrogen Bar. We are happy that you have found the time once again and listened to the newest episode of your favorite podcast about hydrogen and fuel cells. Hello again, and hello Johannes. Nice that you are here once again.
Hello again. Hello from China, and nice to come together to the at the bar again.
Yeah, and definitely.
As this is again an episode sponsored by our by TÜV SÜD, we are happy to welcome also a guest. It is today Thomas Weiss from TÜV SÜD. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Thomas.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Johannes. Thanks a lot for having me here. It's I almost feel a bit honored having listened to your podcast for quite some time now, and having seen the guests you already had, so
yeah,
quite some large footprints. But I'm looking forward to having a discussion with you. I'm really happy.
Yeah, thank you very much for having the time and for coming on the podcast. As Johannes was just saying, you are also a part of TÜV SÜD, or you are working for TÜV SÜD. Would you be so kind and tell us, in a couple of sentences, what you are doing and what's your occupation at the moment?
Okay, of course. Yes, my name is Thomas Weiss, as you already mentioned. At TÜV SÜD, I'm responsible for the hydrogen business at the division industry service, so meaning that everything that's a bit outside of the car, no components, but all the large industry and infrastructure projects. And this is something that is really getting more and more traction at the moment in the hydrogen market, as we see the large-scale projects popping out everywhere around the globe. And my business at the moment is really to talk with our local colleagues on the ground, go there, see the projects, try to talk with customers around our approach and how we as TÜV SÜD can really support the customers, but also these large-scale projects from the first idea as it's now till the realization. And this is also one of the topics that perhaps I could mention here already, that I think you talked already with a lot of colleagues from our subsidiaries, for example, EVT and LBST. These are the two companies connected to TÜV SÜD as well that focus mainly on hydrogen consulting. Mm-hmm. And this is also one of my jobs also to coordinate projects together with them, to integrate them in the projects we have at TÜV SÜD, and of course also vice versa.
Mm-hmm. In your global function, you have there probably a lot of insight on what's happening around the globe in all the projects that we also from time to time have talked about here in these reports. But you are really probably right at the pulse of these announcements and projects. How do you see this development? What do you think will come onto us in the next couple of years? And what do you think are these challenges that we will see there?
Yeah, pretty good question. So first of all, I mean, being on the pulse is not that easy, because there's projects popping up everywhere around the globe on a daily basis. I get so many emails from colleagues showing me new projects. There are so many announcements in the internet, on press releases, on new joint ventures, on new projects, on new cooperation of large players, but also small ones, like regional projects in Germany, but extremely large scale projects, for example, in Chile, in the US, Middle East, Australia, Asia, but also in Europe. Just to give you an idea on the market ramp up, I find it impressive, because as TÜV SÜD, we are also part of the Hydrogen Council. There's a report getting out, the Hydrogen Insights, every few months. And when we take a look at the project and at the report that was issued beginning of this year, there was 228 projects announced with a roughly investment volume of 300 billion. There was an update report in July 2021, just 6 months later. Now it was 359 large-scale projects with an investment volume of roughly 500 billion US dollars. Mm-hmm. So just this is an uptake, which is, in my opinion, really extreme.
Yeah, we have discussed this a couple of times, actually, and we thought that, okay, such a thing as an announcement is one thing, of course, but of course it's just as important, or it's even more important to see the actual money flow, right? So, of course, an announcement is always nice and it's good to see, but what is your impression? Is this hydrogen economy or hydrogen industry at the moment more or less based on such announcement, or is there also real money flowing from one side to the other?
Yeah, it's a transition phase. I mean, the small scale projects are starting. If we see the largest electrolyzer project in Europe, it's coming to life. I think it's 30 megawatt. But we're talking about gigawatt scale now. And the gigawatt scale projects, these are still announcements. Mm. But we are really in a transition phase. The last conferences, for example, I've been in Oman last week, 3 weeks before at ADIPEC in Abu Dhabi. And there you really can see that there is a willingness to implement the projects. And we are from the only paperwork. So we are now in the phase really where we have from PowerPoint to power plant, as we would say, really the phase where it gets out from the strategy slides till really the licensing and the implementation of the project. But there's, of course, some topics that come up that aren't easy. Financing, the bankability of the project is one thing. Then also getting the right people on board, the engineers, and especially the engineers. We know it from TÜV SÜD as well. That, I mean, the market is not endless with skilled person. And this is something that it's now really a complex topic to implement these projects. Mm. And this is the bankability, really ensuring that financing and the insurance of your finance is granted. It's one large topic. And the second topic is also ensuring that you have the workforce that is capable of handling hydrogen and implementing hydrogen projects. Mm. So this is not only a phase during the construction and during the construction phase, but also definitely during operation, because you got to train the people to be able to operate hydrogen plants. Yeah, and the third most important topic I saw during the last month is really the guarantees of origin. Because this is something people struggle still a little bit. How can they access with the product, the hydrogen as a product they produce, the international markets? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You mean that kind of proving that it's really renewable hydrogen or how big the CO2 footprint is?
Exactly. So one side, of course, it's the renewable hydrogen, which is the color coding of hydrogen and green. Mm. But then also, of course, for example, in regions like Middle East, they also focus, or in Russia, strongly on blue hydrogen, or UK as well. So really just producing hydrogen in a classical way via steam reforming and then capturing the carbon or utilizing it in other industries or process routes. Mm-hmm. And this is something which you call in low carbon hydrogen, and this will be also an important part. And there's regulation, it's not unified worldwide. Some regions, there are no regulations at all around the topic of green hydrogen, the carbon footprint of hydrogen. In Europe, we have with Certify an established scheme where we can certify green hydrogen and low carbon hydrogen, but blue is definitely still an open topic. And there we are in discussion with companies and clients worldwide on how to implement such a scheme and how to guarantee, for example, also that the off-takers can use the hydrogen and the carbon footprint, the reduced carbon footprint of the hydrogen within their processes and verify and validate it at the end. Mm-hmm. But this is definitely, I think you have my colleague Paula in one of the next episodes, and she will definitely talk about this as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And another important point where we see, well, why I believe that now we are in a different phase when ramping up the hydrogen market, is that we have an increasingly interest of clients and customers that approach us on, for example, a design review, risk assessment, or technical due diligence for large-scale hydrogen projects. So they're really now in the phase of applying for funding and getting the funding or the investment from banks, from risk insurance companies, or funds granted. So this is really now a phase where projects start to get into realization. So they have a design, they know how they want to implement it. Now they're asking us really to review the design and to do a due diligence on the financial impact or the financial model that the projects have. So that's really why I believe that we're now in a phase where projects come to realization and will get implemented as well.
When you talk about a blue hydrogen, you normally also talk about certain regions which are about to focus on blue hydrogen, at least for the next few years. And one of these regions which is very likely to focus on blue hydrogen is, of course, the Middle East. Now, I know that you have also very deep and detailed insights into the hydrogen markets in the Middle East. What's your impression? Is there this a drive towards a hydrogen economy as strong as it seems to be in Europe? Or is in these countries the situation still different and hydrogen is one of a few or even of many options which these countries will follow in the future?
I mean, it is a strong focus on hydrogen in the region. But the focus, like the financial focus, is a bit different, and the application focus. I mean, in Europe, we cover almost the whole value chain. So meaning that also decarbonizing our transport sector, the heating sector, these are main focuses in the strategies, in the hydrogen strategies in Europe. In the Middle East, there is more towards large scale production of hydrogen because like, the framework conditions are optimal. Like a lot of sun at the coast regions, a lot of wind, plus gas production or upstream oil and gas business, which can be used for blue hydrogen. So as well for green as for blue, there are optimal conditions in the region. And of course, then they are focusing on the export market. But not only this, also on large-scale industrial usage. For example, in cement production or ammonia production in the region. So this is definitely something they talk about as well. But as, for example, gas and oil are still extremely cheap in the region, or subsidized, using, for example, hydrogen in the transport sector is not that of a large topic.
Mm-hmm. You said before also that people are a huge bottleneck. Do you think that this might be really a kind of really inhibiting factor, something that slows down the adoption, that just like there is this war for talent and there are not enough people who know how to deal with hydrogen, how to develop hydrogen applications and so on? Are you there, more pessimistic or more optimistic that this will be just solved by kind of the attractiveness of the market?
I think there will be, it can be a bottleneck, but doesn't have to. Like, I'm not pessimistic because at the end, hydrogen is nothing new. This is something that came up in your podcast as well. So people know how to handle with hydrogen. It's just a different gas. But the problem is that people are not used to handle it in that scale. And of course, if you invest a lot in different projects all around the globe, often the skilled personnel to work with hydrogen is not on the ground. But this is nothing that takes years, like, for example, the formation of an engineer towards the development of new hydrogen products. This is something that can be done in a few weeks of training, yeah, online or even on the ground, and then in some pilot projects. And this is something, for example, we as TÜV offer as well. A training course, for example, on the safe handling of hydrogen, which is getting people a bit on the grip. What is hydrogen? What is different towards, for example, natural gas? What does it do? And what are the dangers or the dangers associated with hydrogen? And how can you handle it? Because hydrogen can be handled in a very safe and efficient manner. Mm. So this is nothing I'm very pessimistic about, but this is something people have to take care of, because this could, at the end, if it's not addressed early and in the right way, slow down the development of large-scale implementation of hydrogen projects, and especially not only the implementation, but mainly the operation at the end.
So you are saying, just to summarize the last few minutes, so to say, that the announcements are there, or the project's announcements are there, and the money is there, and the people will be there or can be there. So this all looks like or sounds like the hydrogen economy will scale up dramatically within the next few years. What do you think? Will this lead to certain problems? Even for the big players, like, TÜV Süd is not the biggest player on the planet, but is definitely a large company, of course. Are you, in a sense, afraid that the growth within the hydrogen economy will be so strong and so big that even the large companies have problems to follow?
I mean, personally, I'm looking forward to it, because it's going to be really an exciting decade ahead of us with respect to hydrogen. But I think when looking at the market and the big players in the market, let's just say the oil and gas companies, but also the large gas production companies, like, for example, Linde and the chemical industry, but also transportation and OEMs, this is something everyone realizes, that if they go alone, it's going to be difficult, because the market ramp up is immense. We talked about it. So we see a lot of partnering in the market. I mean, new joint ventures establishing, large consortiums, for example, for the important projects of common European interest that have been announced. There's a lot of money in the European recovery funds, but also the World Bank. There's really immense amount of money in the market and the willingness to invest. At the conferences, we see more and more private equity or infrastructure investors and funds. We see more banks involved, risk insurance companies. This is something, so they are preparing for the investments. So this is already good. But bringing it all together, I think you need partnering. It's what we do, for example, in larger projects in regions where we're not yet that strong. For example, having a regional partner on board to cover a larger global portion. But on the other side, also topic-wise. I mean, that's why hydrogen in a lot of large-scale projects covers quite a large amount of the value chain. And a lot of companies are really focused on single parts in the value chain, because you just focus more on specifications in the last time. And this is now where new partnerships form. And I think there's a lot of activities on this market. And we as TÜV Süd have to act exactly the same way. So we're partnering with companies in Chile, in the US, in Middle East, in Asia, and also in Europe, being able to offer a larger amount or more comprehensive portfolio of services to our customers.
Now, when you look at all these kind of partnerships all around the world, isn't it then adding another layer of complexity? Like that you say, you have already this huge market ramp up, this extreme fast pace that every player needs to keep pace with, And then in addition, now you need to manage all kinds of partnerships. Would you say this is challenging? Is this like a new opportunity to develop like new business models that, yeah, develop the whole, the old style of doing business further into the future?
Okay, this is not easy to answer, but I would say, of course, it adds complexity in a certain way. But on the other side, it's also nothing new. I mean, joint ventures, when it comes to, for example, developing a new market, was always something industry or companies did. So on one side, to focus the people within the company, or the newly created joint venture or consortium, really on one topic, and also to decrease the risks for the parent company.
Mm.
This is definitely something that is done for a long time, but it is now really increasing speed with the topic of hydrogen. And also, it in my opinion, the partnering mostly increases the opportunities in the market, because you can offer a larger portfolio, you can learn from the partners, and you can, as long as you're not getting into a really competitive scale.
Now, right in the beginning of our talk today, you mentioned that we are in a transition phase right now. We move from smaller scale projects to larger scale projects more and more, so to say. Would you also say that we are about to make this move away from funded projects more in a direction of projects which are economically reasonable and economically operatable, if you will, or are we still in a phase where subsidies, funding, government support are the lifeline of the hydrogen economy?
I mean, both. Especially in Germany, most of the projects still need government funding. Because the framework is a bit different, and the strategy behind it is also a bit different. I mean, when we focus on technology development and the classical engineering part, we want to really deeper understand the different technologies used within hydrogen. We want to build up our expertise and our experience with it, to be able to be a front runner in the market when it comes to new developments. On the one side, and on the other side, we have, for example, large scale investment projects that aim for competitiveness. Absolutely. For example, in Middle East, there is no government funding. So at the conference in Oman, they made it really clear at the Department of Energy, if you come here to get the money, just to get money, you're not the right, you're not in the right place. But if you want to have a right framework to implement the project and to develop something here, then you're more than welcome. And I think this is what's happening. So we are in the phase where the hydrogen projects can get competitive. But this is also why it's so important to have a clear framework. What is the price, for example, of green hydrogen? Why can we sell it a bit more expensive than, for example, gray hydrogen? And this is, again, where it comes to the topic of guarantees of origin, or the carbon footprint of a hydrogen, because you're only, as an off-taker, you're only willing to pay more if you can somehow prove that by buying this product, you can reduce your carbon footprint of your company and of your own product as well.
You have benefit from it,
But still, then basically the government, for example, need to push out some prices, or at least some CO2 prices, right, that then translate along the whole value chain, to make it possible that somebody pays more for green hydrogen than for gray, for example. So from this regard, a strong involvement by governments is probably necessary to give this whole industry a spin.
It is, yes, to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
But my opinion, we already passed a bit this point where it's only be able to do it via subsidies. I think really to get a large market offtake, subsidies will help. And also not only subsidies, but also a strong discussion around carbon pricing. But we also see it in the market now, the really large customers, they demand, they ask for sustainable products, for green products, and for a sustainable footprint. And this is something where we see, for example, also in different regions where our clients, for example, ask shipping companies, ask retailers, how they could, for example, distribute, ship their products in a more sustainable way with a reduced carbon footprint. So we had it, for example, with the steel manufacturers that had that their customers ask for example, green steel. And that's why the discussion started also with us as to shoot and how to verify and validate that the steel production is greener or more sustainable than it was before by using, for example, green electricity or hydrogen. So there's really also demand from the market. And this is something that has changed, for example, in the last 10 years, in my opinion. This helps also the development of hydrogen and also the bankability of these projects.
Now, a final question, maybe. You mentioned that we are in a phase where we certainly are dependent on subsidies and funding in some of the projects that are about to set up or that have been set up recently. Now, of course, there's a lot of discussions on a national level and also on the European level. Would you say that on a European level, the conditions, structures, and policies are suitable for ramping up the hydrogen economy? Is the European Union doing enough, so to say, that in a way that they are forming a reasonable framework for hydrogen industries and hydrogen related companies and new players can set sail and ship towards the hydrogen economy?
I would say yes, the European Union is on a good way. I mean, with the RED II and also with the ambitions the European Union set, for example, to become an international champion in renewable hydrogen technology development and to uptake also the targets of the EU hydrogen strategy when it comes to, for example, electrolyzer installations. Also what they want to do, like for example, to establish this global gateway, to facilitate global recovery and to focus also on the import of renewable hydrogen into the European Union. There's just one thing that's currently under discussion, for example, is around the topic of renewable fuels of non-biological origin, RFNBOs. Because in a lot of areas, as you know, hydrogen, the import of hydrogen is not always that easy because like shipping large amounts of hydrogen has not been done yet, especially when it comes to liquefied hydrogen or also compressed gaseous hydrogen. So discussions are around, for example, ammonia, methanol, or even green fuels. And this is something, there's a current discussion around it in the European Union and with industry associations like the Hydrogen Council or Hydrogen Europe, and how this can be done in a more efficient way to really to enable the uptake of hydrogen as it is desired by officials, government officials, the European Union, but also by the industry. So this is, we're on the right path, but as you mentioned already, there's still a lot to do, but I think there's a willingness, there's money, and there's the knowledge around it. So this is the most important things, and that's why I'm really looking forward to the developments in the next 10 years.
Okay, thank you very much for all these insights, Thomas. It was really very, very interesting to have you here on at our bar and drink virtually a couple of drinks with us.
a couple of drinks in half
exactly.
an hour.
So that's small ones.
This is what we are doing here at the Hydrogen Bar. Yeah.
Ambitious, but doable.
Ambitious.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the motto.
Just, I wanted also to thank you again from my side as well. It was a pleasure talking to you. And looking forward to hearing more.
We'll come back to you as soon as you have new interesting topics to report, so to say. Of course, we would be happy to welcome you here at the bar once again. But thank you very much for today, at least. So thanks again. And for all you listeners, of course, we always recommend that you visit our website, which is hydrogenbar.net. You will also find a contact form on the webpage, so you can use it to get in contact with us, or also, of course, you can use the contact form to get in contact with Thomas. We'll forward your messages to him. Yeah, and then a final words from Johannes.
Yeah, finally, one more thank you to TÜV Süd for sponsoring this episode. And we look forward to hear you all next week again. Have a good time.